That's kind of a rock and roll approach for Nat King Cole on that one. He could sing just about anything he wanted to sing. Send for Me from Nat King Cole. Yeah. I mean, from he started off as a pianist at the Nat King Cole Trio in the 30s and made great recordings, and then branched into pop music in the 50s. Had a couple of country western style albums out, and then some of this kind of early rock and roll. Good sound. I miss that voice. Dinah Washington sang for us, Unforgettable. We heard from Leah Salonga and The Company with Merry Christmas, Darling. Ricky Nelson was in there, too. Lots of music headed your way on this Broken Road Radio Friday. 13 below outside, David. 13 below. And we've had about 10 inches of snow here the last 2 days. No snow today, just crystal clear cold today. Christmas must be upon us. I was listening to Pastor Jeff Klein a while ago talking about, and I'd never heard this idea, that Jesus may have been born during the time of Sukkot, the festival of Sukkot, which would be like September, October. I'd never heard that idea. So I'm thinking about, how could that be? You know, with Doug Greenwald, we've talked a number of times about prospective dates when he was born. And to me, the thing that makes the most sense and that has the strongest indications is that he was born sometime, probably sometime between May and July. As the Paschal lambs were being born on the Judean hillsides. I mean, that's the reason there would have been shepherds on the hillsides at night. Normally, they would be with their flocks sleeping, not out wandering around the hillsides at night. But during lambing season, they would look after the ewes who were delivering lambs out in wherever they happened to lie down. And, of course, that was valuable property. These would have been Paschal lambs. They were temple flocks, and they'd hire shepherds. It was a big business, because remember, Doug taught us that as many as 200,000 lambs walked through Jerusalem up to their slaughter, getting ready for Passover, which would have been, you know, our Easter time. So late
now, this
March
is early. Over the course of how many years, or how many weeks?
The lambs would probably take days to slaughter, because they had, you know, like 1,000 priests there.
Okay. During what festival?
Well, they would have been slaughtered just prior to a Passover, which is Easter for us, you know, that time of the year.
So it would just be once a year.
They would have been yearling lambs, so they would have been born the previous April, May, June, July.
Right. Right.
And knowing how God times things, I mean, there are patterns, there are cycles that teach us on so many levels. It seems so natural to have him born about then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my rationale. I don't know what you think, but it certainly wasn't December. I mean, that's a whole different deal. But we celebrated that, and that's okay. But, you know, there's no biblical rule or injunction or urging to celebrate his birth or to celebrate Easter. You know, the church did that, imposed that later for their own reasons. One of the celebrations I think of, though, that just ended is Hanukkah. Hanukkah ended Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an eight-day celebration, a huge festival, and what it does is commemorate the rededication of the temple in the 2nd century B.C., and that gives it a really interesting tie-in to Christmas. And this is just starting to dawn on me, again, from Doug Greenwald's teachings on Advent. The Maccabees revolted against Antiochus, who was the Roman Greek guy that was running the area, and threw him out of the temple, cleansed the temple, and created the Hasmonean dynasty. And this is about like 155 BC, something really close to that. And the Jews back in Babylon, and mind you, not all the Jews left Babylon to come back to Jerusalem in the 6th century BC. Many of them stayed in Babylon because they had lives there. And it had become a center of Jewish theology and thought and development. But once they heard that back in Israel, Israel and Jerusalem and the temple was once again, for the first time in 500 years, under the rule and control of Jews, then they decided, we're going back home. And many of them came expecting the Messiah. Because remember, Rome was in control shortly after that. But at that point, the Jews were in control. They said, we can sink our Jewish roots down again and reestablish the line of David and fix the temple and do all those things. So they migrated back to Israel. And one of the places they settled, many of them tended to settle in the north, not in Judea, in the south.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being, life was better up north. You know, they had green grass, they had hills, they had four seasons, they had fertile soil. They could manage the crops. They could have rich, healthy, more comfortable lives than they could in the south. So they tended to settle in the north. And mm-hmm. among the places they settled was Nazareth.
Mm.
They actually formed the town of Nazareth. It was named after a sect from Babylon, a Jewish sect of religious zealots, really, that came back and based on Old Testament prophecy, Isaiah and others. They said, mm-hmm. Now's the time we go back to Israel and reestablish the Jewish state. Of course, within a few years, the Romans were there again. Mm-hmm. And so they were greatly distressed. Now we're talking a couple generations down. But they were saying, uh-oh, we got to get rid of these Romans. And that's why one of the reasons they were anticipating the Messiah. The Old Testament prophecies combined with how they saw the time led them to believe that the Messiah would be coming. But Hanukkah is the celebration of that rededication of the temple when the Maccabees revolted. And, of course, there's a story of how they got into the temple and found out that Antiochus had used up all the oil. They had one container of oil that was enough to last one day. Mm-hmm. But they lit the menorah, and it lasted 8 days, you know, miraculously. That's the story, or the legend, perhaps, behind Hanukkah. It's the Festival of Lights is what it is, Festival of Lights or the Feast of Dedication, and it ended yesterday. So just kind mm-hmm. of a tip of the cap to our Jewish friends, and the Messianic Jews are in the area too, plentiful. We tip our caps to them and say, yeah, there's a link between Hanukkah and Christmas that a lot of people don't know about. And it was that time. That's what brought Jews back from Babylon and had them really settle the northern kingdom again with Jews and mm-hmm. Nazareth among the places they founded. And, of course, that became the ancestors of Joseph and Mary would have come back in that group. So mm-hmm. that's how they settled, and that's why Jesus wound up being the Nazarene.
So, are you recording this?
Yeah.
I wish. Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you put this as a podcast?
Well, I could do that, yeah.
Yeah. As the reason I'm asking, and there's a I would think others would be as well, but I'm married into a mixed family.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's parents are Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and one of her brothers married a Jewish woman whose parents and grandparents and granduncles came over to the country from Russia.
Mm.
They were Russian Jews, mm-hmm. moved to Israel, and then moved to this country. And we've been celebrating Thanksgiving at that their house for probably the last, well, since I've been in the group since for 9 years, so it's been 9 years so far.
Yeah.
And her dad is the one that owns the liquor store that brings the tequila.
Okay.
Okay. I'll get to the point here eventually.
Yeah. I'm waiting.
Yes. But this year, Hanukkah began on Thanksgiving. And just one of those coincidences, it was on the calendars if you looked at it. Mm-hmm. It was Hanukkah, was the first day of Hanukkah was on Thanksgiving. And they Elena gave a little short presentation about what you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Hers was much briefer, but she talked about the Maccabees and the and the oil that mm-hmm. was only going to last for a day, but somehow lasted 8 days, and mm-hmm. that's the celebration of the consecration of the temple.
Yeah, and I think this is an unusual unusual menorah too, because it's got 9 lights. It's got 8 regular mm-hmm. lights, 4 on either side of a more prominent central candle holder on mm-hmm. this,
mm-hmm.
and that's the story behind that is that the 8, the 4, and the 4 can only be used during Hanukkah. But for practical purposes, just to provide light, there's this other one, this other ninth mm-hmm. one. But they light one of those 8 for each day of Hanukkah, which this year went from November 27th to December the 5th,
mm-hmm.
which was yesterday. Yeah, it ended. Mm-hmm. So.
Right.
But anyway, that's the link. Yeah, we can I'll let you know when the podcast is up. And I wish I'd been a little more polished in my presentation if it's going to be a podcast, but so be it.
I think you did well.
So be it. Anyway, there is a definite link between Hanukkah and Christmas.
Yeah, and I'm rather proud of my portion, because every once in a while I would look over and say, uh-huh, uh-huh.
I didn't involve you, did I, David?
No, but no, that was my part. That was my part. You're well versed in this,
I'm fascinated by it. The tie-in between the history of Israel and Christianity is something that most of us are just lightly take for granted.
We just brush it off.
We don't know it, but it is so moving and so pivotal to how we believe and why we believe and what we believe. We need to know that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that we brush it off, and it's a relatively new approach to Judaism that 50 years ago wouldn't be able to be spoken of out loud in public.
You know, that's a good point.
Even the darkest alleyways. I mean, it's not that people would shun you. People would say, naughty, naughty. Mm-hmm. You might be killed. You might be strung up or sent to a camp somewhere.
You mean over there or not here?
Well, not here. Not as much here. Mm-hmm. Okay. But there certainly was.
Well, there was certainly hatred of
the
Jews.
There was anti-Semitism here as well.
You know,
during the war.
I've decided recently to reread The Source, which is Michener's book. It's the history of Israel, really. It's about this archaeological excavation of a mythical tell in the northern part of the country. And the setting of the novel, the novel was written in 1964, and he goes into great detail about the young people who worked on the archaeological dig and the kibbutz that they lived in, the socialistic kibbutz. And now this is 1964, mind you. This is a mere 16 years after Israel had been reestablished by declaration of the United Nations and a lot of warfare. And we forget the warfare sometimes. We think, the UN established Israel. Well, people died to establish Israel. Now, there was fighting all around. And even in 1964, most of their leadership, most of the brains, most of the energy and activity came from the military and from these kibbutzes. Most of the leaders of Israel came out of these socialistic groupings of young people. And Israel is so different today. So I can look back at this book, and because Michener's history is phenomenal. It's exacting to see how he portrayed the atmosphere in Israel at that time with what it is today. And it's actually moved away, I think, from Orthodox Judaism. And it's really a secular nation now. And it's been modernized. It's so much more like the rest of us than it would have been back in 1964. But the passion that those young people had for their roots, the ancient biblical roots of Israel, was phenomenal. Now I don't think you see that. Except maybe among the scholar group, the people. Mm-hmm. So big changes there. And it's a different world. The contrast between the two is fascinating to me. Hey, we ought to probably do some news, huh?
Well, I was going to say, is there time? I don't think there's time.
Well, we have some time, yeah.
We have time? Mm-hmm. Well, we do have time. Well, I've got a couple of small stories.
Okay.
One of the things that we're not talking about, we're talking about, President O.